And as you're sitting here this morning, I hope that you will be open and honest with yourself about your own suffering and how you allow your suffering to affect your life in either a positive or a negative way. Suffering serves a purpose. Suffering serves a purpose, but we are so quick to shut it off before it ever gets there, right? We can see our suffering coming from a mile away. We know what it looks like by now, right? And so we're so quick to just shut it off. We don't want to experience the suffering. We don't want to go through the trial. We want to shut it off. We don't want to feel the pain. We don't want to feel the discomfort. There's something very valuable, though, for you if you're willing to allow yourself to go through that trial, to suffer, to bear the weight of whatever it is that you might have to suffer. There's something waiting for you on the other side of it. But you have to go through it in order to experience or to receive, to attain the value of suffering. Our text this morning will be Job chapter 3, and we'll go through it here in just a moment. It is a privilege and a blessing for me to be here with you this morning. I hope that you'll take your Bibles and study along with us together. One of the things that everyone on earth today, times past, I imagine also in the future, one of the things that the people of earth share in common, have always shared in common, something that everyone has known about in some way or another, and maybe, you know, for some people or some regions of the world or some generations, worse than for others. But one thing we all share in common is human suffering. Suffering as a human. It doesn't matter what country you live in, what gender you are, what ethnicity you happen to be, what generation or period of time you happen to have lived in. Suffering is something that we have all experienced. It's something which transcends race, culture, religion, your religious background. It transcends age, wealth, gender. Suffering is not unique to any generation of people, although the specific type of suffering may differ from year to year, but all have suffered or will suffer. Some of you are suffering this morning, aren't you? I'm suffering from sinuses, and you can probably hear it in my voice. Some of us are suffering. You know, that's what brought you here, in fact. You saw the billboard outside that said something about suffering, so you wanted to come see what that's about, see if you can take something from it. Suffering is something that we have all shared, something that we have all experienced. Another thing that people of Earth share in common is this tendency to ask a question about suffering. Why do I suffer? It's not a bad question to ask, I don't think. I'm not opposed to asking the question or even trying to answer the question, but this is something that also everyone on earth shares in common. And so this morning we seek to answer some pretty difficult questions, I think, regarding the nature of suffering. Why do we suffer? Why do people suffer? Why does God allow mankind, His creation, to suffer? Why does God allow those who follow Him, that is, in a faithful, obedient way? Why does God allow those who claim to be His children, His followers? Why does He allow us to suffer? Because you imagine, well, if I, from the mind and in the body, become obedient to God, surely that will end all suffering, right? And there are a lot of people who use that as some sort of a formula to avoid suffering. And guess what? You become a child of God by faith and obedience, and the suffering just starts piling on, especially in the first century. You claim to be a follower of Jesus, and you might find a sword at your neck for it, okay? That's suffering. It's suffering because you're a child of God. Why does God, though, allow us to suffer? Why do good things happen to bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? And I've heard this question. You've probably heard it as well. If there is a God, why do bad things happen? Which is, it's not a question that really makes any sense, but okay, so I'll play the game. If there is a God, why do people suffer? Why does bad exist? I have a better question. If there is no God, why does good exist? It's a question, neither question really address the real issue, though, do they? But this is a question that you've been asked before. If there's a God, why do people suffer? Why does He allow us to suffer? And these are all good questions. These are all fair questions. These are questions that maybe you've asked yourself. You've had this question before. When the skeptic is desperately seeking Another means by which to avoid God, the skeptic is wanting to avoid God, looking for something that will validate his or her position that there is no God, or maybe there is no God. When a skeptic is looking for that piece of ammunition, this is one of the first places that they turn to: suffering. Experiencing, you know, those who are quote-unquote good people, experiencing bad things and vice versa. This is one of the first places that those people turn to. This is not a bad question, though. It's a question that you've asked. It's certainly a question that you have been asked, right, by others. You've been asked this because they know, well, you're a Christian, right? And you go down to that church over there at Southwest, or you go out there to Spicewood. Let me ask you this. If God is so good, and the hurricane is just the last of many things on a long list that they throw in your face, well, what about this? Can you explain this hurricane? Well, I can, but not in a way that's going to suit you if you're trying to avoid God. Well, they bring up all of these pieces of information, or really pieces of ammunition, is what they are, because it's a person who really wants to avoid God, perhaps. Maybe not always, but certainly that is true for some of them. These are good questions. There are other questions, though. There are other good questions that really often go unasked, and they're equally important questions, I think, because they, unlike the first question, why, these questions truly get to the heart of the subject of suffering, or at least they do a better job of getting there than the question why. Why do I suffer? Why do people suffer? What does it mean to suffer? That's a better question than why do I suffer. What does it mean to suffer? Define suffering. What does it mean to suffer? That's a better question. Some endure bad things and label them suffering, and there are others who would endure the exact same thing and call it a blessing, right? What's the difference in how you define suffering? What does it mean to suffer? Is there any good that can come from suffering? How does one suffer when they suffer? Is there anything of value that comes from it? And is God to blame? That's a really important question, I think, especially this morning. Is God to blame for my suffering? Is God, you know, sitting in heaven and steering things my direction that would cause me to suffer? And I will say that no, God does not do that. And I know some would say, yes, God does that. Is God to blame for our suffering? I don't believe that that's true. I don't believe that one is valid or validated in making that argument. Is God to blame when Job suffers? Is God to blame when I suffer? It would be impossible to treat all of these questions in great detail this morning, but I'm certain that for one who is seeking the wisdom of God, some satisfaction will be reached if you would open up the pages of God's Word, His communication to you, and see what His Word has to say about suffering. If you want to know something about it, if you want to have some satisfactory understanding that will help you cope, that will help you struggle, fight the fight, there's something here for you of value. There's something here that God has given to us that we can take and learn from as we deal with our own human suffering. John writes in John chapter 3 in verse 16, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish but have everlasting life." And from this one verse, this single act, this teaches us an awful lot about our God. It should also motivate us, I think, to live a certain way. Whenever you understand the concept that is revealed here in John chapter 3 and verse 16, this has to motivate you to live thankfully for what God has done, to live with appreciation for what God has done, to live a thankful lifestyle because of those things. And especially that we might realize our need for God's saving power. And it is with this in mind that I want to give thanks to God for this wonderful opportunity this morning to participate in this lectureship. I'd also like to thank the Southwest congregation for her efforts, and also especially her desire to realize her duties to God. And this is made possible by a faithful eldership, which makes these things and supports the work of the church as it ought to be doing, but makes these things possible. You can't do these things without faithful brethren, without a faithful eldership. And so I greatly appreciate the work of this congregation. And I hope that everyone who is a member of this work and a member of this congregation who is a participant, I hope that you will remember that this is not about me. This is not about you either. The work that we conduct here, it's not about everyone, it's not a self-isolated group of people. That's not what this work is about, is it? It's about the people who are driving down Manchac and they see that sign. And it might cause them to want to come in here and open up the pages of God's Word and see what it says for them. And with that in mind, and if you keep that in your awareness, the work of the church continues out of faith. And I want to thank each one who is a participant in that. I want to thank you this morning before we get into the text. Neither the faithfulness of a congregation nor the constancy of that congregation's eldership can eliminate the reality of suffering. You can be as faithful a congregation as you want to be in all of the works and the things that you participate in. You can have the most faithful eldership, faithful minister who teaches and preaches. You can have all of the faithful members in a congregation working together. And did you know that you cannot, with any amount of faithfulness to God, eliminate the reality of suffering? No amount of faithfulness on our part can eliminate the reality of suffering. But we will try, won't we? And there are some, at least, who will certainly try. They'll have this idea in their head, well, I'll become faithful. I'll just start doing more. I'll start saying the right thing. And then the suffering will end. Suffering continues, doesn't it? Even those of you, you come to church every Sunday morning. You come to church every Sunday evening. You come to the Bible study every Wednesday evening. You stay for the devotional. You participate in all of the weekend devotionals. And you do all of these different things. You go to the camp and teach Bible class. And in somewhere in the back of your mind, you think, well, this is surely going to eliminate any possibility of suffering, something that I might find uncomfortable, right? There are people, I don't know where you are, but there are people like that. That's an expectation they've placed on God. If I will be faithful, then I won't ever experience anything uncomfortable to me, any kind of suffering. Such is not within our capabilities, and nor is it within our responsibilities. If it were, you wouldn't have the need or the desire to be here this morning, would you? If you thought that you could eliminate suffering by your faithfulness or devotion to God, you really wouldn't have the need or the desire to be here today. But you're here to gain some understanding, some better understanding of suffering, and especially the value of suffering this morning. In the book of Job, a story is recorded of a man who loved God, and not that kind of love that's easy to say, but that kind of love that's difficult to do every day. He loved God with every ounce of his being. It's not just something that was in his head. It's not just a concept or a word to this person. This kind of love manifests itself in obedience. But the greatest love for God cannot eliminate the reality of suffering, as is evident in the story of this man, Job. He loved God. He eschewed or turned his back on evil. He did those things that were right. And he was rewarded. He had blessings because of these things. But he did those things that was right. He served God to the best of his ability, but he found that such dedication could never make him immune to suffering. The truth is clear to Job. This truth is clear to Job. And he gives expression to the frustration and the confusion that his suffering, the undeserved suffering especially, that his suffering has caused. We move on to the text this morning of Job chapter 3. I want us to consider, number one, the message of suffering and the need to learn what it teaches. You can learn something from your suffering if you will open up your eyes and pay attention to it. Whenever you're suffering, something is being communicated to you, but are you listening to it? The first thing that comes out of my mouth is, woe is me, I'm suffering. Well, won't someone come to my rescue and give me a hand and make it easier for me? Quick, give me a pill because I'm suffering. Give me some sort of chemical agent that will eliminate or relieve the effects of suffering. You can learn something from your suffering if you'll pay attention to it, if you'll listen to it. The message of suffering and the need to learn what it teaches. Number two, the cause of suffering and our ability to rise above it. Number three, the effects of suffering and the dangers that accompany it. And this is where we'll get into the text of Job chapter 3 this morning. And then number four, the value of suffering and what we can accomplish because of suffering. Suffering can be, it can be, a very useful tool at your disposal. But we want the good life. We want everything to be happiness all the time and no suffering. Suffering means, you know, bad, and we want happiness all the time. Suffering, Jesus was a suffering servant. We can learn something whenever we go through those moments in time, and it doesn't have to be suffering to the same level or to the same degree as that which Job is suffering now. It doesn't have to be that kind of suffering. Indeed, we have all suffered in many different ways, haven't we? Some of you are suffering here this morning. I have a number of members at the congregation in Spicewood, and one in particular, he's going through chemotherapy right now, the radiation. He's got he had a root canal, and the radiation is bouncing off the metal in his mouth, and it's created this huge blister on the side of his cheek. He can't eat. It hurts to talk. And this guy is in physical painful, so it hurts him to just sit and be still. Physical pain. And, you know, there he was sitting there in worship service yesterday. He's suffering. I don't know what that kind of suffering is like. And there are those, they're suffering emotionally. They're suffering because they've been hurt. They've been wronged somehow. Many different ways to suffer. They don't have to be to the same degree as Job. And you suffer. What do you do when you suffer is a good question. How do you act? How do you behave? How do you change when you start suffering? These are things that you need to be aware of, because whenever you start suffering, whenever the weight starts piling on, none of us are immune from falling away from the grace of God. Whenever you start suffering, you might change your stance. You might change how you behave, how you live. So pay attention to what you do when you're suffering, or when you're going through moments of great stress. Our text for this chapter, or for this lectureship, my particular area of treatment, is Job chapter 3, verses 1 through 26, at which time Job begins to express those feelings of hopelessness and helplessness over the condition that he's suffering. Chapter 3 is going to be divided as follows. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, Job considers the life of a sufferer a curse. Job chapter 3, verses 11 through 19, Job considers the death of a sufferer a blessing. Job chapter 3, verses 20 through 26, Job considers the futility of living as the sufferer. And Job is not suicidal in Job chapter 3. We'll get to that text. But Job is not contemplating killing himself in Job chapter 3. Something else, though, is going on. It's something that all of us can relate to right now. How much time do I have left? Okay, well, I came up this morning with the impression that I had 50 minutes, and I learned I had 37. Before we get into Job chapter 3, it's important for us to understand the circumstances leading up to this point, that is Job chapter 3. In Job, the first chapter, the book opens with the reverence of Job, the riches of Job, the righteousness of Job, Job chapter 1, verses 1 through 6, and then the custom of Satan, that is the work of Satan, the role that Satan plays, the challenge to Satan, the claim of Satan, Job chapter 1, verses 6 through 12, and then in Job chapter 1, verses 13 through 19, the testing of Job begins with the loss of his children and his wealth. Job chapter 1 closes with an encouraging note, though, the consistency of Job. When life became difficult, Job drew closer to God. When life became hard, when life turned in an unexpected direction, when the uncertain things, when the worst thing that he could have probably ever thought of happened, what did he do? And it's the exact opposite of what a lot of people do when it starts piling on, whatever it happens to be. He drew closer to God. Job chapter 1, verses 20 through 22. Then Job arose and he rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell upon the ground and worshiped. He worshiped. He went to God when things got tough. A lot of people go in the exact opposite direction. Verse 21, it said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Job had an understanding about living the human physical life in general. That is, naked came I out, naked shall I return thither. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He worshipped. When times got hard, when times got tough. The custom of Satan from Job chapter 1 is, as he puts it, to walk in the midst of the earth stalking his prey. The adversary knows no other function. This is what he does. This is his specialty. This is his full-time job, walking up and down in the earth stalking his prey. And I guarantee you, Satan knows the address to this church building. He knows how to get in, too. He knows where you live. He knows how to get in your house. You think that you come in here and the devil's going to stop out at the front door. He knows how to get into a church building. He knows how to get into your own home. Because this is his full-time job. And guess what? He's really good at it. He's really good at doing what he does. James chapter 4, verses 7 through 8, though. "Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh unto you." We may never expect anything different or better from Satan. We must resolve, therefore, as Job did, to draw closer to God in times of distress. You're never going to look forward in the future to Satan all of a sudden doing something different. He doesn't know anything else to do. He's really good at his job. He knows how to do it. "Submit yourselves, therefore, to God." James, by inspiration, says that overcoming the advances of the devil is dependent upon our humility and our willingness to draw closer to God. We may confidently say, you can say this with confidence, the devil has no power over you except what you give to him. The devil, through temptation, has no power over you except what you give. You have more power than he does. But the only way to access the power that's within you is to appeal to the power of God through his word. You have more power than Satan has over you. He can't make you do it. He's an easy target. He's an easy label for us to, you know, kind of throw everything off on. Well, that's all the devil. You've got more power than he does, if you choose to use it. How do you use it? Draw near to God. We're told that he will literally flee from us. And I don't know exactly, I'm talking about the spirit realm, but turn to God in humility and obedience, and at least for a temporary period of time, he will flee from you. He's going to return, though, but he will leave, at least in that moment when you turn to God. And when the devil had ended all the temptation, he departed from him for a season. Jesus overcame the advances of the devil, but he had to continually fight. He came back, though for a season. He's going to return. He's going to come back. And do you know how to fight him when he comes back? Do the same thing that you did earlier. Turn back to God. Continue to turn to God. Keep yourself faced or turned in the direction of God. And more so as we continue to be attacked through temptation by the devil. Job chapter 2, verses 1 through 6, the efforts of Satan have not been altered because of Job's success. Job chapter 1 ends with a good, positive note. And, you know, we read the text and we can take a sigh of relief at the end of Job chapter 1 because he made it, right? Until you turn the page and find out, well, Satan's not quite through with him yet. And guess what? You know, you have a moment of personal triumph and you would just like to stop everything right there and freeze time in that moment of personal success or personal triumph because you've done it, right? And guess what? Turn the page, life goes on, and tomorrow it's going to be a different story. What will you do then? You're going to be met by the devil again through temptation. You're going to have to fight him again by turning unto the power of God. Job chapter 2, verses 1 through 6. Satan has not altered his efforts. "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity?" Although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. Satan's argument, basically, is that Job serves God only for what he receives in return. He is never, in other words, Job has never had a good reason not to follow after God. This is what the devil claims about the character of Job. He's never had a good reason not to follow God. He's never been tested or tried to the extent that he would be motivated to curse God and pursue something different. And incidentally, there are a lot of people about whom Satan would be right. You know, they come to God maybe because it's what they've always done, or but you let the testing begin. The trial. Let a trial begin. How many people, you know, that's it, that's all I can take. And they turn around real quick. And they turn from God instead of turning to God. He's right. He's on to something about a lot of people. It doesn't take a whole lot of testing to turn some away. It's amazing how easy it is to get some people out of the church and to cause them to turn away from a faithful walk with God. When we desire to live forever here, when we desire to live forever here on earth, heaven is no longer in our consciousness. It is with this in mind. That Satan, as a roaring lion, stalks us, he tempts us, he seeks to completely consume us. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 through 9, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Well, we turn away from God whenever we become afraid, whenever we're tempted, whenever we're tried, whenever we suffer. We get this sense that, you know, maybe our very survival is at stake, and you have this idea that you're going to live here forever. So you go into self-preservation survival mode. And as soon as we start trying to save our own skin here, turning away from God is one way to do that. Heaven is no longer in our consciousness. Suffering can certainly be used to cause a person to turn away from God, but suffering can also be used to turn a person closer to God. I want us to look now at the message of suffering and what it says, what it teaches to you, if you're willing to pay attention to it. The message of suffering, human suffering, teaches us something, but what are we learning? Whenever we suffer, whenever you, wherever you are at this moment, you know, you're hearing these words, maybe you're reading these words in the manuscript book, maybe you're in the pew, if you take the book home and you read these words on the couch, wherever you happen to be, take just a moment and consider and be thankful for all of the rich blessings that we enjoy. Do you take the time to think about all the things that you have at your disposal, those things that you can use as resources to be a servant of God? Do you actually take the time to think those things, count your many blessings? Wherever you are right now, I want you to just stop and think about some of those things and be thankful. We enjoy the blessing of life, health, family, friends, and also the ability to assemble together for this lectureship without having to worry about the government or someone coming in persecuting us. And although this is not an exhaustive list, these things, in my opinion, are all blessings. These are all things that you ought to be thankful for. And things that are also easily taken for granted. Taking something for granted is, to me, just another way of indicating that one has forgotten the true meaning and the true value of a thing, person, or event. The things and the people we cherish the most can all be taken from us. The things, the people, the events, the things that we cherish the most in this world can all be taken from us without a moment's notice. And then the real testing of a person's character and resolve begins. The message of suffering. There are many in the world, and even in the church that I have come across at least, who believe that the test that one must pass in this world is the acquiring of things, the building of relationships with others, as if these accomplishments could eliminate suffering. Now, the implication at least is that by acquiring things or building these relationships, you can stop suffering somehow. A lot of people, both without and within the church, seem to live this way. At least that's the implication that's given. If that is the test, if that's the test of this world, then Job passes hands down, doesn't he? He's got a large family, a lot of wealth. He's very well respected by his fellow man, those in that local community. If this is the test, Job passes hands down. And once one has accomplished these things, to their satisfaction, they feel how? They feel complete. Once you acquire all of these things, maybe you get that sense of completion, that sense of satisfaction. I say that a person who has gone through life acquiring things and building these relationships, they haven't passed the test. They haven't even yet begun to be tested. Anyone can do that. Anyone can acquire possessions, acquire material. That's what we do. That's our specialty. And we know how to do that well, don't we? Anyone can pass that test. Suffering is a different test altogether. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 22. There are a lot of people who are unwilling to discover. There are a lot of people who are unwilling to discover if they can pass the test of personal material loss. A lot of people who are unwilling to even discover if they're capable of doing it. Matthew chapter 19 verse 22. But when the young man heard that saying, what saying? If you want to be faithful to me, place your trust in me. Paraphrase. Summary, generalize. Place your trust and your confidence in me. Get rid of those things upon which you are dependent. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. In other words, he identified himself in those possessions. He took a look at those things and he said, that's me. And furthermore, he understood this about his possessions. He knew that when his fellow man looked at those things, they also said, that's him. That's respect. That's reputation. For many, these possessions or achievements, the circumstances of a person's life indicate or say something about them. Namely, that they have what? Succeeded. That's what we do these things for, so we can look successful in the eyes of others. And that they should also be free of suffering. If you've done all of these things, you're going to be free from suffering. The presence of these things, in other words, equals the absence of suffering altogether. One should not expect, though, that after acquiring these things that you're not going to suffer. I don't know, some of you will have a date for me, and that's okay. You can give it to me later. I'm not too concerned about the date. But I do know this. Stock market crashes, and what else crashes? People out of a window, right? There are people who would rather face death than to have to face this world without their things, without their possessions, right? I'm not going to keep living. I'm not going to keep living like this. I can't cope in a world without my things. The message of suffering, what does it teach us? I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Romans chapter 8 and verse 18, we get so focused on what we're suffering from right now that we lose sight of that thing which should occupy the forefront of our minds and our thoughts all the time, that glory that we will receive later. Suffering. Now here's part of what suffering teaches us. Suffering teaches us that we live in an imperfect, sinful world where we shouldn't want to stay to begin with. It also therefore points us in the direction that we want to go. Suffering can be used as a tool to point you in the direction that you claim to want to go, that is heaven. To dwell in heaven eternally with your Maker. Suffering reminds you of that better place, doesn't it? Suffering reminds us of how we ought to be living. To be honorable, to be pleasing to God, to be a good example unto others. The cause of suffering. There are two ways of answering the question, why does man suffer? And man, many view the cause of suffering from a theistic point of view. Why do I suffer? Well, you can view it from the theistic point of view, which teaches us that we suffer as a result of sin. Sometimes we suffer as a result of others too, don't we? Sometimes you suffer and it's not specifically something that you have caused. You can suffer as a result of others. And we don't like that when that happens and we say that's unfair. And one of the first lessons that I learned, one of the first lessons that was taught to me, I didn't learn it until much later, I'm in the process of learning it even now, is that life isn't fair. It's not fair. It's not supposed to be. I don't know who made up the rule that life is supposed to be fair. It's not supposed to be fair. It's unfair because we live in an imperfect, sinful world. Sometimes we suffer as a result of others. We may also view suffering from the humanistic point of view, which teaches that some people suffer because some can overcome it and others can't. In other words, you know, suffering is a way of weeding out the weak, survival of the fittest, right? And none of these definitions do. If you want to understand and cope with your suffering, suffering does not teach us who deserves to suffer and who does not deserve to suffer. Suffering does teach us that regardless of who you are, regardless of where you live, regardless of what you have accomplished, we live in an imperfect, sinful world where bad things happen to good people. Good things often happen to bad people. Job was a reverent man. Job chapter 1 and verse 1. He was one who suffered, though. He was a rich man, but he found no relief from suffering. Job chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. He was a righteous man, but his righteousness provided no shield from suffering. It's not supposed to. He was a well-respected man, and we think, well, if I can just gain the respect of my peers, that'll end all of the suffering that I have to experience. The cause of suffering. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Sometimes you suffer as a result specifically of something that you have done, and you have to pay the consequences of that. We have to face the consequences of sin. Romans 6:23, for the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. The wages of sin is death. We are dying. I'm dying right now. I'm only 28 years old. Well, you look at me and, well, he looks pretty good. He's doing well. He's healthy. I'm in the middle of dying right now. We all are. That's the result. That's the consequence of sin, physical and spiritual death. Physical and spiritual death makes itself manifest in human suffering. We're reminded of that whenever we suffer the pain of loss, the pain of being unhealthy. The cause of suffering, well, we suffer as a result of things we do, the things that others do. We suffer as a result of sin and the consequence of sin, which is death. The effects of suffering. Job chapter 3, verses 1 through 10. Some commentators see Job chapter 3. I've read this a number of times. Now Job, now he's contemplating suicide. Maybe his resolve to follow God has shifted or it's changed. It's dwindled somehow. I don't see it that way. I see chapter 3 rather as a chapter in which the purpose of suffering is evident. The purpose of suffering, at least you can use it this way, is to point a person, to sharpen a person, but to point a person in the direction that they're already intending to go. Suffering makes that direction clear to you. See, it's easy for anyone to come into the building, you know, on Sunday, Sunday night, Wednesday night, whenever everything's going well for them in their life, right? And they can, you know, do that pretty regularly, put on the show. But you let them start suffering, and very quickly and very clearly, they're going to see what direction they're really heading. Suffering does that. This is one of the effects of suffering. Job chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, though, this is another effect of suffering. Job questions the value of living. After this opened Job his mouth and cursed his day, and Job spake and said, let the day perish when I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness, let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come unto the number of the months. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse it that curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. Job questions the purpose, the value of living in this world as a sufferer. Job does not know the cause of this great trial in which he finds himself. He does not know what has caused it. He's suffering for some unknown reason at this point. The most time-consuming and energy-taxing event in which we can engage ourselves is to stop and to start asking the question, why? If you want to waste a lot of your time, do that. Why am I suffering? And at the end of the day, you still might not know, right? Why am I suffering? Job made up his mind, even though he didn't know the answer to that question, why. He later says in Job chapter 13 and verse 15, though he slay me, yet will I trust him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. The effects of suffering. For our light affliction, Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 17 through 18, our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen.